the challenge for us is that if growth is on God's agenda for us as a church, then our responsibility, if you like, our challenge is how are we going to welcome them in as a church family. When I was a boy, I fell into a wasp nest while riding a bike. It was a pretty traumatic event. I must have been about 11 years old. There I was on my makeshift BMX. It wasn't a proper BMX, but it was one of these kind of nearly wannabe make BMX bikes, running around my friend's garden, doing wheelies, looking cool as we thought we were. And sadly, it all came crashing down as I lost my balance and tumbled off the garden into this area of land in the back there. And what happened was, as I hit the deck, I was like, oh, slightly embarrassed, getting up, not realizing where I'd actually landed, which was a wasp nest. About 10 seconds later, I soon realized that it really was a wasp nest that I landed in, as I could feel a wasp stinging me in my back. So, in a panic, sprinted across the road into my house, into the kitchen. Mum, I've got a wasp, I've been stung. And I've got three layers on, and she's trying to pull off my jumper and this T-shirt, and I've got a vest on, and it's still not coming off, and it's stuck over my head, and the wasp is stinging me again. And then, by the end of it, eventually my mum deals with these wasps, and I'm left on the floor crying, feeling very sorry for myself. I have a confession this morning. I killed a wasp while I was preparing for this message. Now, I have to say that there may have been a small part of me that was acting out some kind of revenge from an 11-year-old boy's experience, but actually when I thought about it, I realized that one of the main reasons was that it was out of fear and an inconvenience. I didn't want to sit in a room while this wasp flew around, like looking over my shoulder, constantly thinking, is it going to sting me or is it just going to spit all over my biscuit that I'm trying to eat? Besides, I was running out of time to prepare for this message. So, what did I do? I was in PJ's office. He's away on holiday, so I got to use his comfy chair. Picked up his A4 pad and just swatted it away. You know, I wasn't going to wait for it to fly out the window. This was an inconvenience to me. So I swatted it away, and it splattered into the wall and made a nice dark mess. I did clean it up, and you'd be pleased to hear. But, you know, the point is this, that my fear is that when our needy neighbor knocks on the door, she's going to rob me of precious time about trivial matters and wanting to use the phone again. Or it's that my fear is that when someone new joins our small group, it will ruin the environment that we've got, that it will kind of spoil some of the relationships because we have to start all over again and make room for somebody new. Or just simple things like, you know, we don't like the way that they talk. They don't speak the way that we do, or something important like that. You see, the danger is that we see the introduction of these people as a threat or an inconvenience, and we just swat them away. The danger we face is that out of a desire to protect what we have, we miss what God is doing, and we respond out of fear, not faith. So if God is bringing growth to us as a church, what is our faith response going to be to him? Is it going to be, I quite like my small group with these people in it. Why is my small group leader inviting another person in? Or is it going to be, well, we're really busy right now, and well, maybe in a few months, if you come back to us then, we'll be able to help out. Now, I recognize that there are times when groups need to stabilize and we need to give time to consolidate where we're at. But if you're anything like me, I'm always looking to stabilize. I'm always looking to stay in that permanent state. I like my small group. I think they're great. I get on really well with them. We've got good relationships. We've got people who are just building a sense of community together. And people are, when you add a new person in, it disrupts the flow and it gets a bit awkward and you have to go back to the beginning and start to get to know one another again. And, you know, adding two people right now would just be very inconvenient. But, you know, the point is, if we're in a situation where we haven't got room to add people into our lives and we're too busy to do that, maybe the question for us is, what are we busy doing? See, growth isn't convenient, and it doesn't seem to come in neat, bite-sized chunks. And things like our alpha and beta teams, they can't function in isolation to do all of this for us. Jennifer and I lead the beta course, which is a follow-on from alpha, really giving an introduction to the Christian faith and helping people set up foundations. And I remember looking around the room recently, just at the last meeting, and thinking to myself, everyone who's made it through this course has done it because they've had someone who's walked with them on the journey and helped them along the way. You know, there's a lady who came and did the course, particularly just to be with her friend, and just to support her through it. And sure enough, just like most people, there were bumps and things that happened on the way that life brought, that brought challenges, and she didn't come 1 week. But because her friend was there, she was there to pick her up, phone her up in the week, or just get together for a coffee and ask how it was going. I was talking to someone the other day, and I asked him, when you became a Christian, why did you stay in the church and not leave? He said to me, because I became a Christian because it was a place where people gave a monkeys about one another, and I stayed because of the same reason. So I asked 5 other people the same question, and they all said community, friendship, experience of being accepted, or knowing that I belong. People are not just looking for a place where they can answer the big questions of life, but they're looking for a connection, a place where they can belong. Now, this is a very challenging message for us. You know, if we want to be a church that changes our town and impacts the region beyond, we want to see the things of God that we've been talking about this morning already, then building a community here where everyone experiences a sense of belonging is going to be the only way that we host God's presence and his people faithfully. The passage that I want us to look at briefly this morning is going to be, I hope, and a helpful sort of encouragement and visioning for this, and giving us reasons why we do it. And the reason I spent so long just now just giving the introduction was I wanted us to connect with the context that we're in as a church and what God's doing right now as we look at this passage. If you've got your notes, it's in Hebrews 13, verses 1 to 3. I'm just going to read briefly and then pray for us. If you haven't got any notes, then just stick your hand up and I'm sure a steward will come around and get some to you. Thanks, guys. Okay. Keep on loving each other as brothers. Do not forget to entertain strangers, for by so doing, some people have entertained angels without knowing it. Remember those in prison as if you were their fellow prisoners, and those who are ill-treated as if you yourselves were suffering. Now, the context is that for this passage is it's all about hospitality. This is about, there are 3 sort of clear outworkings of this, in that we see that the writer is saying, love each other as brothers, entertain strangers, and remember those who are in need. It's important to notice the repeating emphasis as well, that there is this keep on, there's do not forget, there's remember. And that tells us something important about what the writer was communicating to the audience, that they were already doing the stuff, and this was a simple exhortation to keep on doing that. You know, hospitality was at the heart of the early church. Okay, and we're just going to break this down. So I'm going to spend just a moment or two on the first part of this, and then we're going to focus particularly on the second and third aspects. So the first thing is a church that really loves each other. You know, the brotherly love, the reference to brotherly love here, in the Greek it was understood to be for men and women. It's a context of kinsmen or kinsfolk. So it's not just for the guys here. This is for everybody. And as F.F. Bruce said, who's a well-respected theologian, he says that brotherly love is no mere sentiment. You know, in 1 John 3:16 to 18, it says, this is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers. If anyone has material possessions and sees his brother in need, but has no pity on him, how can the love of God be in him? Dear children, let us not love with words or tongue, but with actions and in truth. I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for Toby Kosh. Some of you might know that. A lot of you may not know that. Some of you may not know who Toby Kosh is. I don't know if he's actually here. He may be working. But I was a student. I did an Alpha course at the university in my 3rd year. After Alpha, I was very much impacted by discovering God and encountering him. But if it wasn't for Toby, I'm not sure I'd be standing here right now. See, Toby very simply just opened his home to me. He gave me a lift to church on a Sunday evening, because I was a student, didn't do mornings in those days. He would listen to me. We'd have cups of tea and chat and just talk about kind of where life was at. He didn't do anything spectacular. He didn't spend all his week with me. He didn't cook me meals all the time, although the odd meal was nice as a student. But he simply just offered friendship to me. And actually, that was a connecting point for me to join a small group. Now, you know, the next section focuses particularly on the aspect of strangers. And You know, in the passage it says, do not forget to entertain strangers. For by so doing, some have entertained angels without knowing it. Now, this is undoubtedly a reference to the encounter that Abraham had with God and angels that you see in Genesis 18, 1 to 10. If you do have a Bible, you can flick there. If you don't, I'm just going to pick out a few verses and just focus on those for a few minutes. There were two things that really characterized what Abraham did in this passage, and I've kind of coined it around the invitation. Now, the first thing that he did was that he offered a warm welcome, and you can see this in verses 2 to 5. It says in the passage, Abraham looked up and saw three men standing nearby. When he saw them, he hurried from the entrance of his tent to meet them and bowed low to the ground. He said, if I have found favor in your eyes, my lord, do not pass your servant by. Let a little water be brought, and then you may all wash your feet and rest under this tree. Let me get you something to eat so you can be refreshed, and then go your way, now that you have come to your servant. Very well, they answered, do as you say. See, Abraham saw these guys, and he approached them. He initiated, and he models to us, you know, that the basics of hospitality is that we initiate as the host. You know, Sunday is a great opportunity to practice this privilege. And I'm just going to illustrate this, and I need a volunteer. So, I'm going to pick on somebody. Paul Rowland, can I borrow you? Just before you come up, if you just hold there for a second, can I borrow the mic, Sam? I'm sure this is just me that does this on a Sunday, or perhaps sometimes struggles with it, but just in case you relate to my experience, this is often what can happen on a Sunday. Now, Paul, if you would stand, but don't start walking yet. Now, you're going to make your way, and we're going to meet each other in a moment. You're going to come down, but do it really slowly. Okay. He's not coming towards me, is he? Don't think I can look away now. Where's my children when I need them? Oh, ah, okay, I've got to go say hello. Hi, Paul, nice to meet you. I just did that wrong, didn't I? Yeah, take the mic. Here's how it works. That, you don't know his name. Sorry, I just did that wrong. Thanks, Wendy. Yeah, I wish it was prophetic. So here's how it works. They're coming across the room. You're not feeling too great about wanting to meet somebody. Why is that? Most of us, I reckon, have been around a while. It's because we're thinking, I've never met them before. They've probably been here 5 years and I've never said hello. So I feel really embarrassed about trying to say, how long have you been coming? So here's a little way around it. So you say, hi. Extend a hand, smile. It's nice to meet you. We've not met before. Can I introduce myself? My name's Mike. Go for it.
Hello, Mike.
What's your name?
Yeah, my name's Paul.
Great, great. Now, if you don't want to do the, is this your first time, or have you been coming along a while, then you can just simply say something like, how was your week? How's it gone this week? You know, everyone's had a week, haven't they? So if you're struggling for a question, you know, ask them how their week was. So, how was your week, Paul?
You asked me already. We met in the loo this morning.
You're not supposed to say that.
Yeah. I'm really not the person to ask because I'm rubbish. Anybody asks me, and this will be for you guys as well, if you try and be hospitable and the person comes back with nothing. So I'm one of those people, I really struggle to work out what sort of a week I did have.
That's okay, Paul, because I have a response to the people who say fine and don't say anything else. So go, say fine.
Fine.
Great. Okay. Now, here's the prepared response to when someone says fine and you're like, ah, what do I do now? Here's what you do. Okay. You know, for me, I have kids, so simple thing to do. On a Sunday morning, after the service, I've got responsibility. Three kids are usually tearing around. My son is probably climbing a tree out there doing an impersonation of Tarzan, and I'm thinking, have I got time for a drink? Can I stop and chat? Do I need to run out there before my son does something that I'll get into trouble for? So, you say something like this. You say, hey, I was just going to go and rescue my Tarzan impersonation son out there. Do you want to come with me, or should we get a cup of tea and come along? You can ask somebody to join in with what you're doing. You don't have to stop and force a conversation and make it work there and then if it's not flowing. Get them to join in with what you're doing. Now, maybe you're not like me and you don't have a six-year-old son who's running around. Maybe it's for you is you're just thinking, oh, I was just really hoping I could connect with someone in my small group this morning. Or I was really looking forward to seeing this person. Why don't you just say, hey, I was just going to go and catch up with a friend. Do you want to get a cup of tea and I'll introduce you? You can come meet them. And it's just a simple thing of what you've done there is you've broken away from the fine and where do I go with this to, hey, meet somebody else that I know And, you know, wherever the conversation goes after that, Paul feels like he's had a good welcome. He feels like he's been treated well and he's been included in what you're doing. And it's a very simple thing. Thanks, Paul.
Hey, very
nice. Okay. The second thing is that there was an offer of hospitality. And within this, there are two things to know. Abraham acted quickly. Why did he hurry? This is a really interesting question. But in the passage, it says in verses 6 to 8, I'll just read this, listen to this. So Abraham hurried into the tent to Sarah. Quick, he said, get 3 sayers of fine flour and knead it and bake some bread. Then he ran to the herd and selected a choice tender calf and gave it to a servant who hurried to prepare it. He then brought some curds and milk, and the calf had been prepared, and set these before them. While they ate, he stood near them under a tree. 5 times, there's a word that either says hurried, quickly, or ran. See, Abraham knew the importance of hosting well, and he knew it was important to God. See, when we act quickly, it communicates value and acceptance. When you say to someone, when you respond, it says you have a place here. You're important to me. It matters, you know, your experience of us meeting like this. Sadly, whether it's on a Sunday or whether it's over the course of a number of weeks, if there isn't the response, then often in the silence, the enemy fills it by saying the opposite. Most people who don't return to the King's Arms after visiting leave because of a time or relational gap. If we wait too long to invite them to a small group or into Alpha or into something else of a way of connecting in with the church, then we find that people typically will end up leaving. The success stories are when you see that hospitality was offered quickly and there was a place for people to get plugged in. One of my roles, as Simon mentioned at the start, is to oversee this process of helping people getting plugged into the church. And I get to see really the whole picture from start to finish. And, you know, we have lots of routes into the King's Arms at the moment. You know, there are lots of ways in for people to connect, whether it's through the events that we're hosting, whether it's through Alpha, Beta. We've even got welcome and integration teams to help people to get plugged in. But, you know, what tops all of that is when somebody initiates and just says, hey, some friends and ours are going down the pub after church tonight. Or, hey, you know, my small group are doing a barbecue this week. Why don't you come along? You know? They may not stick around, they may not come back the following week, but they've had the invitation and they've had a welcome which says they're important. And also, he did this. The second thing is that Abraham did this because he lived with a kingdom in mind. Scholars believe that the documents that were written at the similar time to this letter to the Hebrews, speaking about this exchange that Abraham had, is that these men would have looked like Arabs to Abraham. Remember that we as the reader know that these guys were angels and God himself, but for Abraham, he would have looked at them and seen them as Arabs. Now, this is a radical approach to hospitality because Abraham was a Jew, and I probably don't need to go into too much of a history lesson about the Jews and the Arabs, but it's short to say that obviously they weren't the greatest of friends. Even associating them with them was not looked upon favorably. For Abraham, this demonstrates a real attitude of honor to hit the guest. He brings the fine flour, the tender calves, and the curds and milk. And he really delivers a 3-course meal to strangers. But the amazing thing about this whole exchange is that Abraham gets a whole lot more from the deal. You know, he inherits the prophetic promise as a reward. We see this in verse 10. It says, the Lord said, I will surely return to you about this time next year, and Sarah, your wife, will have a son. And this just speaks of the inheritance that was to come to Abraham. Not many people know about the steward who gave a warm welcome to a young boy who was looking to cause trouble at a church meeting in Charlotte in North Carolina in 1936, of how he put his arms around Billy Graham's shoulders as he headed for the exit and said, you know, hey, you're welcome. We're so glad you're here. Let me take you to a seat. So the steward took him to a seat. And the rest is history. Billy Graham found Jesus that night, and then he went on to take Jesus all around the world. That steward could never have known how God was going to use him that night, and his reward was greater than he could have imagined. I guess the question for us is, Who are we giving the invitation to? And how are we going to find the reward that God has for us? Maybe if you're new here and you're kind of hearing this and you're thinking, it's interesting, I would just ask you to, in this process, we're very much on a journey with this. We're looking to grow as a church. These are things that, the things that I'm speaking about are aspirations and desires for us as a church to live out. And I would ask you to bear with us and help us in this process. But if we're here, if you've been around for a while, this is a message that we need to hear and take on. You know, God is doing a significant thing in our time. And, you know, if we're praying, God save people, God impact, let us impact this town, let's see a change, people are going to come. And we've got to be ready when people come. Okay, last point. Here we go. The church, this is the last point, really just speaks about a church that remembers those who are in need. For the church at the time of this letter being written to the Hebrews, it was still illegal to be a Christian. So for it was a common experience for the church to experience believers who would be in prison. So they knew what it was to go and to care for those who were in need, to visit people in prison, to care for them. Stories even from that time of Christians who would bribe the guards so that they could go in and they would lock them in the cell so they could be with them, not only sharing food with them, but also just encouraging them and praying with them. And they knew what it was to identify with them. If it was prisoners for the church back then, who is it for us today? Who are you loving that's in need? And who has God put in your path to express family to? See, the challenge is that to love an extra person often is quite a costly thing. To think about making room in our lives for another person, particularly if that person is not, their life circumstances are not in a great place, it can be a very inconvenient and unsettling thing. For my wife and I, we've recently had the privilege, I say that with a smile because it's a privilege and a challenge, of encountering two people really from our neighbourhood. One is a lady who's got learning difficulties, has got a very chaotic life, frequently turns up at our house at various different points wanting to join in with whatever we're doing, borrow a potato, use the phone, hang out and chat and talk to the kids. Another is a young boy who up until recently would frequently be seen running up and down the street getting himself into all sorts of slightly hair-raising activities for a one so young. And he would, both of them just would turn up at our house unannounced. Often the little boy would just wander straight in through the back door. I remember one time just coming in, grabbing, he's got Leighton's scooter in one arm as he's helped himself out of the shed. He's gone up the stairs and he's like, baby, baby. And Caden, our baby, wakes up from her nap and you're like, what is going on? How did he get in the house? And why is he here? I didn't ask for this. You know, no one invited him round. You know, my reaction to that when that started to happen was one of, you know, I'm busy, you know, I'm doing a job, I'm doing lots of good things in the community, I'm helping the homeless, you know, don't ask me to do any more, God, you know. So, and my heart was very much exposed when I would come home and find, let's call her Jane for now, Jane standing in our kitchen chatting away to Jennifer, you know, throwing our kids around, teaching them high fives and generally just involving herself, which actually I've come to realize is just a great privilege that she wants to come and spend time with us and be in our home and that God's put us in a place where we can do something to impact her life. When people arrive at our church, they're presenting themselves and they're saying, will you receive me? Do you accept me here? Is there a place in your family for me? It may be that God leads them on elsewhere and they don't end up getting involved in the church. But the response for us is to issue the invitation. It's to open our arms and to say, hey, you're welcome here. Come on in. And just in conclusion, you know, you may be thinking, well, okay, where do I go from here? What do I do with this? What are the places for me to connect in? Well, if you are asking that question, that's great because I've got an answer. And this is, you know, what I talked about. We've got an ambition to become a place that really demonstrates this and lives this out. And if people's experience when they come to us on Sunday, for example, is to get better, then we need to expand our welcome teams. That we need to have new people joining into those teams. We want to get people out in the car park. You know, on the winter days when it's raining, having people with umbrellas that can greet people, bring them in, say, hey, this is, you know, you're welcome here, as well as having people who are already inside the building. You know, there's only so many times I can ask Wendy Miller, who's on our integration team, to meet up with a 20-year-old for coffee to welcome him in. I need some other people as well to join in with the church and helping with integration teams. You know, if you like having coffee and hanging out with people and helping them find a place to join in, then I'd love to chat to you about helping out with the integration teams. You know, with the beta course that we're running, one of the lessons that we've learned is that we found that that people need somebody to walk alongside them. You know, you may not be able to do beta every week and get commit to the team, but if you were committing to say, hey, I'm happy to support what you guys are doing as a team, draw alongside people along the way, help them find their way in getting to a small group, that would be brilliant. And that's just an excellent way of adding to what we've got. And if you're new here and you're thinking, well, how do I respond this morning? Well, I would say to you that probably the biggest lesson that we've learned over the years is that if you're not in a small group, you're going to feel out of place. You're going to find yourself drifting and not feeling connected to the body and to what we're doing here. Get yourself into a small group, connect into a community, commit to one another as you do that, and trusting that through that you'll find your place in the family.